Valentine's Day is just around the corner, which means there's a lot of questions to be answered. Will Travis Kelce propose to Taylor Swift? Will your estranged boyfriend's Super Bowl parlay hit so he can afford your date night this Valentine's Day? Are the origins of Valentine's Day in the execution of a Roman saint or a pagan holiday centered around animal sacrifice? Historians disagree. No matter the query you pose this February, we've got answers right here on K-True 96.1 FM. So find yourself somebody that looks at you the way Garrett looks at our goat, Tari Eason. Roll the music and let's talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Thank you, producer Chloe. Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Clevenger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on K-True 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show, where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on K-True 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for K-True Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at ktrue.sports on Instagram and at ktruesports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for us, feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop us an email note to ktruesports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can talk about it on the airwaves. Throughout the next hour, you will be hearing from a team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, it is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments from the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. We're going to be particularly focused on campus this week, as a lot of our Rice athletics teams have had interesting results since we last talked to you last Saturday. We're going to start off on the hardwood as usual with Rice men's and women's basketball. On the men's side, you may remember they had a marquee matchup last Sunday against the number 19th nationally ranked Memphis Tigers. They lost that game by 3, just 86-83 at home. They then were able to snap a 7-game skid on Wednesday when they beat the East Carolina Pirates on the road by 13, 73-60. Caden Powell went off in that game for 18 points and 10 boards, and Trey Broadnax had 19 points and 6 assists against Memphis, then 8 more assists against the Pirates on Wednesday. He continues to be the Owls' best player, and both of them, Broadnax and Powell, in my opinion, have shown a little potential to help potentially kind of fix the leading scorer go-to get a bucket guy that the Owls have kind of been looking for all year. One of their biggest questions that we've talked about on the show. The Owl men are 12-11, 3-7 in the conference on the year. Their next game is at Charlotte on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. You can watch that on ESPN Plus. But also wanted to shout out, the Owls will be on the U at 8 o'clock next Tuesday, the 11th. They will be home versus North Texas. If you want to watch Tudor Fieldhouse on network television, that might be your only chance for a while. The Rice women have been on the struggle bus a little bit. They lost to FAU 66-61 and then to Tulane 78-67. They moved to 12-11, 5-6 on the year. Malia Fisher had 14 points and 9 assists against FAU and then dropped 32 against Tulane. Great performance from her. She is filling that star role after coming back from injury very well. Dominique Ennis also had 15 against FAU and has been playing pretty good ball. The Owl women are 12-11, 5-6 in the conference this season. They are back in action next Wednesday on ESPN Plus at South Florida in Tampa. That game is at 6 p.m. Central Time. The Rice swimming and diving team haven't updated you on them in a couple weeks. They recently lost a meet against the Houston Cougars 182-111 and then competed at the Sterkel Classic, which is a meet hosted by the University of Texas in Austin. Other teams there, I believe, were TCU and Texas and just a few other miscellaneous Texas schools. A few standout performances for the Owls. Ella Dyson won the 1650 free with a time of 1631.73 seconds. And Ava Portello won the 500 free with a time of 4:49.78 seconds. And there are many other Owls who podiumed and did well in their respective events. The Owls' final regular season meet is coming up this Saturday, the day this episode airs. That is February 8th, and they will be at the UH First Chance meet where they will be competing against Houston again and a few other schools. On the tennis court, the Owl women have continued their absolute dominance. They were in the Intercollegiate Tennis Association's match of the week this week against the aforementioned Houston Cougars. They were able to win that 4-0. They won the doubles point thanks to a great comeback from Sara Arava and Francesca Maguina, who were down 5-2 in their first set, came back to win it 7-6, and then won the second set 7-3 to take the match. Singles was a complete steamrolling work by the Owls. Nathessa Selvaraj won 6-2, 6-0. Ratkovic won 6-2, 6-0. And Martinez won 6-2, 6-1, which is like not... like that's a very standard like stat line for them, which is kind of crazy to say. I feel like they're just winning, you know, 6-0, 6-1, 6-0, 6-2, 6-0, like every week we talk about the Owl women. They're on absolute tear. Their next match is at home on Friday, February 14th at 1 o'clock p.m. They're taking on the Mustangs of Southern Methodist. That game can be watched on PlaySight if you happen to know what that is and be into tennis. I didn't, but there you go. Now we're going to kick it to our newest segment, the Rice Cooker. We would not be in Around the Hedges if we didn't mention what might be the biggest trade in the history of sports. Doncic to the Lakers, AD to Dallas in our home state of Texas, and a few other nuts and bolts here and there. Our very own David is going to cook some rice and give us his thoughts.
Thank you, Ian. Yeah, welcome to the Rice Cooker. Today we're going to be talking about the Luka AD trade. Look, as a Mavs fan, this trade just shocked me. I got the call late in the night and I couldn't really believe it. The main thing that I want to talk about is just how Nico Harrison has really treated this team. Honestly, last week, if you talked to me about my opinions about Nico Harrison, I would have said, I think he's done a great job. I think he is one of the main reasons that this team was able to go to the Western Conference Finals and go to the finals and be such a competitive team because of the trades that he's made, the signings, PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford, you know, getting Quentin Grimes. But now he's sold the soul of the franchise and we are done. We have given up 10 years of this massive superstar, this person who is one of the few top dogs in the NBA, for someone who is, what, 30 years old and injury prone and just not as good of a player. There is no world where this is a trade that we both win. Like, I really couldn't believe it. And now when you look at this team, sure, it doesn't look bad. It's Kyrie, it's Anthony Davis. It looks like something that could compete. But we are talking about an NBA Western Conference that is chalked to the brim with competitive teams that are willing to exploit any weakness that we have. And frankly, we still have a lot. The perimeter defense there just isn't as capable as we want it to be. It wasn't capable when Luka was there and certainly still isn't now. And like, yes, Anthony Davis is an entire interior defense by himself, but really, like, we need more. We needed a guy who had the playmaking level of Luka Doncic, and you expect that to just be replaced by Kyrie going full supernova. Like, he can't do that every single game, even every single game in the playoffs. Like, it's not a reasonable ask of him, and it's just so difficult to see where this Mavericks team can go. Because it just feels like we've traded away so much of our future. And now the only thing we have left is, what, Kyrie? Like, what can we really do?
Thank you, David. We can tell you are very, very hurt by this trade.
I was.
And I would have to agree with you on the initial reaction. I certainly thought it was fake initially. I got a text in a large group chat, and I was like, there's no way. I need to look this up. I need to make sure Shams posted it. Like, I had to check Instagram, Safari, whatever. But after reviewing it for a couple days, I do feel like this could end up being a potentially win-win scenario. Now, yes, they gave up a chunk of their future, and the main guy who's been their franchise player for the past 5 to 7 years. But can we really trust Luka Doncic to sustain that level of play for the next 5 to 7 years to bring you a championship? If we go back to the finals last year, it was pretty evident the Mavs were not a championship-level team. They were not close to the Celtics level. They got one game off pure desperation because they didn't want to get swept. But each game, they're scoring sub 90 points. Like, they were getting beat by 15 points consistently. And they go out in the summer and they get Klay Thompson, who's completely washed. He had a good game against the Celtics recently, but he has not moved the needle at all. They needed defensive improvements, and the offense became ineffective as Luka kind of was over-relied on, and the rest of the guys just weren't able to step up to play with him. So by getting Anthony Davis, they get a 9-time All-Star, 4-time first-team All-NBA player, 3-time first-team All-Defense, an NBA champion who's also, although he has had an injury history, has been healthy for most of this year. Anthony Davis is not only going to up their level of defense by playing the four next to Lively and Gafford, that's probably the best rim protection in the league. He's also going to help you on the offensive end in terms of getting easier buckets through the post, through post play and the mid-range, which is key in the playoffs. And I think the biggest concern was, can Luka sustain this level of success with the way he treats his body? They saved $116 million by moving on from Luka. They were going to have to pay him the Supermax contract for over $350 million. And I don't think you can trust someone who, when he gets injured or when they make the finals, is drinking beers and like acting like he doesn't care. Like, even Nikola Jokic, who we make fun of for not caring, shows effort to keep his conditioning at a super high level. And I don't think you can really afford to pay someone a Supermax contract when you can't trust their level of effort.
I mean, LeBron drinks a cup of wine every day, so I don't know. I think I would trust his conditioning, but I see your point.
Okay, but the thing is, with Luka, you're like, like, in the finals, like, he was a liability, but they still were able to get to the finals with him.
But I think the problem is the goal, like, the West got stronger over this past summer and in the past offseason. We're seeing teams like the Rockets and the Grizzlies emerge, as well as still seeing the Nuggets.
Yeah, but you would have taken the Mavs with Luka over the Rockets in the playoffs. Don't tell me otherwise.
Of course. But you are seeing the West develop, and the trade for Klay and any other moves the Mavs made didn't really move the needle at all. And they were still way far off from the teams like the Celtics, who are elite, like, top-end teams. And the Celtics could potentially go back-to-back this year.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but I still don't think this trade makes them a bigger contender than they were in the past. And now we have chopped off our window into, like, 2 years now.
I think I like this move because they're saying we're all in on these 2 years. We've got Max Christie, who's a good perimeter defender who can also knock down the three ball. And you've got Anthony Davis, who for the next couple years will be one of the best big men in the game, especially at the four, which is what he played when he won the title. And I would argue that JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard are not nearly as comparable on the 2020 Lakers as Derek Lively and Gafford are right now.
You're absolutely correct, but it's still just not worth as much as 5 years of Luka Doncic. Like, genuinely, it's just like the level of playmaker that he is. Like, that's one of the biggest problems that we've always had with this Mavericks team throughout any iteration. We did not have enough playmaking aside Luka, and now we've just lost Luka. So really, now we're looking on to rely on Kyrie, on Klay, and Spencer Dinwiddie to be able to playmake and create things, because Anthony Davis is an incredible play finisher and he can create his own shot, but he does his best alongside someone who can playmake. Like, that's why the LeBron-Anthony Davis pairing works so well.
I do see that point. I will be a little bit concerned about how Kyrie can handle the role of playing, like, a true point guard night in and night out, especially in the playoffs. But with Anthony Davis and a guy like Derek Lively or Daniel Gafford, you can dominate the glass, and you can dominate in pick-and-roll scenarios, pick-and-pop with Anthony Davis. Like, you can run a pick-and-pop with Kyrie and Anthony Davis and have Daniel Gafford or Derek Lively sitting in the paint waiting for a rebound or a lob opportunity. Like, there's a lot of options they have with Anthony Davis, whereas with Luka, you're kind of sitting there watching him dribble the ball and hoping that he can get a lob. And we saw that the Celtics were able to limit that a lot. They were able to limit the threes and limit the dunks, and that kind of halted the Mavericks offense.
Let me pose a question to both of you guys as we kind of wrap up this segment. What would make this trade a success for the Mavericks? Like, what has to happen for this trade to be looked back on as a success?
It has to be a championship within these 2 years. And I even think that with that, you just have lost, like, the soul of your franchise. And it's so difficult to see, like, Luka in purple and gold that, like, this is someone that should have been a Maverick for life. Like, the transition to Dirk to Luka was something that was, like, widely publicized. And it's just, like, it feels like it was supposed to be something that happened. But Nico Harrison's ego decided he didn't like Luka, and he was the one who had the power to change that.
To your Nico Harrison point, he did work with guys like Kobe, MJ, and Tim Duncan when he worked at Nike. So he has seen the high level of effort it takes to win. And to the point of your question, Chloe, it has to be a title. Like, there's no, like, the reason you do this is because you feel like last year's team plus Clay isn't enough and didn't improve enough to go beat the Celtics or go beat the Cavs, beat the Thunder.
Yeah, I think time will tell best with all of these things. I think not only do the Mavs have to win a championship, but I think not necessarily that the Lakers don't win one with Luka, but I think if the Mavs win one, but Luka has a ton of success with the Lakers, I think that also will skew how the optics of this trade look.
Like, Luka will probably win his first MVP with the Lakers, and that's just, that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, but I will say this trade also kind of gives shades of, like, the Hard Knock segments of, like, the Giants GM being like, oh, just, like, don't have Saquon go to the Eagles, which is a little teaser for our Super Bowl preview section coming up. But first, we've got a PSA and promo. As food insecurity becomes a growing concern for college campuses, Rice is proud to join the efforts of campus food pantries nationwide. Located in the Rice Memorial Center, the pantry operates on a good faith basis, and its stock of non-perishable food and hygiene products is available for all students, faculty, staff, and community members. Rice works to ensure the pantry is an accessible and anonymous resource, as well as a space where individuals always feel welcome. And our promotion, whether you're lounging on the back porch, soaking in the early morning of a lazy day, or embarking on your daily commute to work, it's always a good time for jazz, featuring artists from all countries. Hot Coffee Cool Breeze is the snazziest and jazziest show on K-True that plays bebop, swing, avant-garde, and everything in between. Let's talk some Super Bowl. All right. On this segment, we got Jacob, our newly minted against the grain commentator, Max and David. Let's start off this discussion by talking about the matchup in general. Overall, what are we expecting out of this Super Bowl?
I think we're expecting to see another fantastic game. We've seen fantastic games for the past few years, like just one score, tight games, comes down to huge moments. You see great players. And I think we should expect to see the same thing on Sunday.
I mean, personally for me, I think it's just going to be I don't think it'll be a shootout, but it'll definitely be a very defensive-oriented game with a lot of opportunities for both teams to have great plays and put their team on top.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not as big of a football fan as these guys are, but I am very excited to be able to see a matchup like this. Unfortunately, I do want both teams to lose, as I am a Cowboys fan, but it'll be exciting to see.
Always a hater.
Always.
Rooting for the Meteor.
So, Jacob, you mentioned the defense. What specific part about the Chiefs' defensive game plan are you most interested in?
So, obviously, you gotta keep the guy, Saquon, like, on a leash or some sort. Just, you gotta somehow control him. So, obviously, the Chiefs have looked so far so good this season with having the 8th lowest rushing yards in the league, only allowing 4.1 yards per carry, which is about league average. And so, this number is included in the postseason, and I would say, like, they've only, although they've given up 150 rushing yards a game in this postseason. Like, there's something that, like, they've only given up one run of 40-plus yards this entire season, so that's something to look forward to. I think their secondary's looking to prevent those types of big plays that the Rams constantly gave up during their game. But
yeah, I definitely agree. I think the highlight and the big question is, can the Chiefs stop Saquon? James Cook did run it well against them in the last game, but you will expect Spags to have something up his sleeve to hopefully stop Saquon. But I think an interesting point you brought up is not giving up the huge runs, like the huge chunk plays. I think the issue for the Chiefs with that is the tush push, because they can churn out 3-4 yards a play on runs, and then you get to 4th and 1, 3rd and 1, and they just shove Jalen Hurts across the line, and there's really nothing you can do. While they were able to stop Josh Allen's QB sneaks, this is a little bit different.
Yeah, I have a question going off that. Spags is obviously known for his blitzing on 3rd and 4th down, but for that to be most effective, right, you need, you know, the offense to be a bit behind the change. If Philadelphia stays on time, as you were kind of mentioning, and they end up in 3rd and shorts, how does that affect the game planning?
I mean, you're relying on your front seven as the Chiefs. You have guys like Nick Bolton and George Karlaftis, who we'll get into in a little bit. You've got to rely on Chris Jones as well to really, like, be locked in, and you almost can't run, like, these fancy stunts and stuff because they take too much time when the Eagles are just able to hand it off to Saquon and get 2, 3, 4 yards.
I mean, going into that a little bit more, I would say definitely the pressure just comes on the Chiefs D-line trying to beat the overpowering O-line of the Eagles and just preventing those sort of chunk plays and just going back to what Max said, just avoiding those 3-to-4-yard gains that are going to start killing you. And if the Eagles establish a run game from early on, they're going to have the advantage. They're going to run out the Chiefs' ability to just play, have possession in the game. And if they sort of take control of that, then they can obviously they can win the Super Bowl. They can take it from there. And, I mean, we're going to get into this a little bit later, but they can revamp the entire way we see the offensive system in the NFL.
That's one side of the ball. Should we flip it and talk about the other side of the ball?
I would absolutely love to talk about the second greatest quarterback of all time, Patrick Mahomes.
Ooh, okay. All right, we got some spice here.
He's coming for the GOAT crown. Mm-hmm. But we'll wait on that till he wins this game. He knows what's on the line in terms of legacy in this game. This is something that's never been done before in a three-peat. And we've seen him consistently be spectacular in these must-have moments. Now, I would be concerned if we see another game like the first one against Philly or the ones against the Niners where they're down 10-plus points and having to come back. Like, as we talked about before, they're going to be playing against Saquon and the best O-line in the league. However, Mahomes' ability to step up in the playoffs, running and passing, is out of this world. I would say, behind Lamar, he's the best playoff rusher in the game.
Wow.
And you just see this consistently every single year. He's running through people. He's getting 10, 15 yards on a 3rd and 10, right when he needs it the most. Right when the other team thinks they have him, he pulls something out of the bag, like a deep ball to one of his receivers or a huge run play. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
I think I could definitely voice on that. It's just, as people say, the voodoo magic. They just pull it out of the bag. It's just, you don't see it coming, and then they're already down the field, and it just happens so fast. It's just something, the Chiefs' offense is just something you can never sleep on, and you never know what tools they're going to make out of Marquise, Hollywood Brown, or just, you just genuinely don't know when Kelsey's going to get another 30-yard reception.
Yeah, absolutely. So getting into some of the specific players, does anyone stand out to you, Jacob, as a potential X factor in this game?
I mean, personally for me, switching the sides of the offense now, going back to the Eagles, Jake Elliott, having a rather regular season, only having about 77% from the field goal makes. And so obviously, like, the last Super Bowl came down to some crucial kicks between the Eagles and the Chiefs. And it's something that's going to force Sirianni to, like, maybe gamble more on the offense and going back to, like, how we mentioned the tush push. And if the Chiefs don't stop him on those tush push, then, I mean, I feel like the game could be made on those types of plays just because Jake Elliott can't kick from more than 50 yards. He's 6-for-7 from over 49 yards on the season. A very unreliable guy. And so you got to, like, it's going to come down to, like, seeing what can happen on those fourth and shorts, or if Elliott misses some field goals, how do those points make or break the season for those teams?
And just to confirm, he has missed 6-for-7 from over 49 yards, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be relying on a guy like that. However, I think that's part of what, like, makes the Chiefs so great is you have teams changing what they do because they're playing the Chiefs. Like, we saw the Ravens last year throw the ball 45 times and not run it when they're a run-dominant team. And for me, my X factor would be Nick Bolton, linebacker for the Chiefs. Again, going back to that Saquon game plan, you cannot let Saquon get to the third level. Getting to the second level is already bad enough. But shutting down those huge runs that can really change the game is definitely key. And then also, he's obviously in charge of organizing the defense as he's playing middle linebacker. But he's also going to have a key role in stopping Jalen Hurts on the ground, who I think is criminally underrated as a passer and a runner. And if you allow Jalen Hurts and Saquon to get going, or just one or the other, it's going to be a huge problem, and I think a lot rests on his shoulders.
Yeah, I want to see Jalen Hurts run the ball more in this game. I feel like they've been conservative with him all year as a runner. Like, there's no need to be conservative anymore. Like, this is the game to really make use of having a mobile quarterback. So, yeah, for all the talk about Mahomes being able to use his legs, like, I think for the Eagles to win, we need to see Jalen Hurts make some big plays with his legs in this game.
I mean, sorry about that.
Absolutely. I think you definitely need Jalen Hurts to start taking over.
Yeah, but going into the Jalen Hurts point, how does this win sort of solidify? Does it push him into the next tier of quarterbacks? And how does it look like the future if Jalen Hurts manages to win finals and the Super Bowl MVP?
I personally am a Jalen Hurts supporter, so I don't really have anything against him now. He's won at every single level that he's played at. But if he wins the Super Bowl, I think the biggest thing for him is he's going to save himself from the hate of Eagles fans. I think he could throw for 400 yards this weekend, and if they lose, it's not going to be Saquon's fault. They might blame Sirianni, but they will put a lot of the blame on Jalen Hurts just because he hasn't had the best season. But I think it's so easy to forget that winning 13, 14 games in the NFL is extremely difficult. And you see teams like the Lions and the Chiefs are now kind of making it look normal in a sense. But Jalen Hurts is a winner. And if he wins the Super Bowl, I think that just solidifies him as one of the top quarterbacks in the game.
So how would they respond to this if they lose twice against the Chiefs? Would this just, I mean, regardless of what the outcome is, Philadelphia is going to go absolute carnage if the Eagles win or lose the Super Bowl. But besides that fact, if Hurts wins this, or if they lose again, or what would the outcome be for the Eagles?
So I think if they win this, I think we have to rethink how we build NFL teams, at least in terms of the NFC. So the way it kind of is right now is the AFC is extremely quarterback driven. You have Mahomes, Lamar, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, CJ Stroud, and Justin Herbert. They're put in more of a spotlight. Whereas in the NFC, you see teams like the Lions, the Vikings, and the Eagles, the 49ers, who have this plethora of weapons. So if the Eagles are able to knock off the Chiefs, I think some of the AFC needs to rethink a little bit how they play it out. Like, you see teams like the terrible, terrible Jaguars paying Trevor Lawrence an absurd amount of money. And then they just limit themselves. And now you can't build a team like the Eagles have, like the 49ers did with Purdy and Garoppolo. Like, you just limit yourself so much. And I think if the Eagles can win that, it proves that you don't necessarily need the number one or number two guy to win. You can win with a dominant offensive line and a dominant defensive line with great skill players.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hope we see a changing of the guard a little bit, because I'm a big build from the line philosophy person. But I think you're totally right. I think it is interesting that the two different conferences kind of have gone down different paths in that sense. And yeah, the AFC is very quarterback centric, which is great for big discussions and game lines and storylines. But yeah, it hampers your overall team building. So we'll see if Mahomes' magic prevails, right? If you have that one guy who's a cut above the rest, does that cancel everything else out? Or you need to take a more holistic approach?
I mean, definitely, I can speak to that. It's just when you have, like, the AFC providing, like, the most amount of MVPs as a recent, obviously, Josh Allen with the MVP award last night. But Josh Allen was turning absolute scrubs into amazing players. And the type of, like, energy that you get from seeing those types of, like, plays and seeing that development from the teams and what the quarterback can do given their tools, just something that's kind of, like, what makes the NFL so fun. And, I mean, obviously I'm not saying that seeing Saquon run for 60 yards isn't fun. But I think there's obviously, like, a win-win in the entertainment factor for both sides of seeing a really great QB or seeing, like, a really great team overall.
Yeah, absolutely. I think both ways are provide a lot of entertainment, provide a lot of material for discussion, and extremely competitive games, as we've seen in the past few Super Bowls. Now, I'd like to get into if the Chiefs win this. Do either of you have any thoughts on how this elevates Mahomes or Andy Reid's legacy?
Absolutely. They're going into the GOAT conversation if they win this. Three-peat is just something unseen. It's never happened in the Super Bowl era. And definitely something that you got to look forward to. And it's just something that you might only experience once in your lifetime. And from there, it's just, where do you rank them? And probably they're going to be going top of their respective positions.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think that so soon post Brady, we're seeing another dynamic duo in Reed and Mahomes that could already have topped them. I think that's where it kind of catches me off guard, just because of the longevity of the dominance of Brady and Belichick. But in terms of this early career stretch, I mean, Mahomes and Reed have just blown them out of the water in terms of success. So I think it'll be interesting discussion. I think it'll have to do a lot with, like, different generations' perspective on this, kind of like we see a bit with, like, the MJ LeBron debates. But yeah, I think right now the Chiefs are on an absolute tear, and I think it would be hard to argue against them.
I think that early success is kind of a key point here. I do not think this win propels either one above Brady or Belichick. However, this is an incredible, incredible run by Mahomes and Andy Reid. The fact that they've done it so quickly is something of note, and I think that's really why people want to put Mahomes above Brady already, is because they're projecting that, okay, they've won four already and they've done three in a row. Surely he gets a couple more and now he's the GOAT. But I do think for now, even if they were to win this game, even if they did it in dominant fashion, I would still have to go with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick over Mahomes and Reed as a duo and individually. But I do think we need to get away from the refs and being angry at Taylor Swift being shown 10 times in the game and all this other extra stuff, because we are witnessing some of the best football we've ever seen on both sides of the ball from the Kansas City Chiefs and the most talented quarterback we have ever seen. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes. So I really think this weekend we should appreciate it and not let some of that other stuff overshadow the greatness.
I totally agree with that. It's I mean, it kind of reminds you of the 1991 to the 93 Bulls, right? And with MJ, and that's where you're kind of getting in this conversation, right? You're gonna get, like, the dominance of MJ, like, but a shorter career compared to LeBron. And so, I mean, it's still gonna depends how Mahomes turns from this season and translates it into the next couple of seasons and see how much he can win if Kelce or if Jones retires and how that team will look after that. I mean, we also got to talk about, obviously, the possibility that they don't win. How much will this loss affect them? Will Kelce still retire? Will Jones still retire? Will there's just so many questions that if they do lose this, how much it will hurt them, how much it will hurt Mahomes' legacy, the Chiefs' dynasty so far, and if they're going to be able to rebound.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. Losing this game, it would be obviously a huge disappointment, but I don't think it really hinders anyone's legacy inside that building. Like, Mahomes has never been outside the AFC Championship as a starter. So this is just like a normal thing. Like being 3-2 in the Super Bowl in the first 7 years as a starter, you can't really you can't really ask for much more. Of course, you want to see the most on this Sunday, but losing this game, I don't think really hinders his legacy. Now, would it be nice for him? He'd have something concrete over Brady that you could say, okay, he's done something that no one else has done before. But realistically, no one like Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, Andy Reid, they don't need this for their legacy. It just bumps them up into a different stratosphere. So you lose out on that. You're not going to fall back because of it, though.
Yeah, I think beyond legacy, Jacob kind of alludes to an interesting point of like, when does this roster kind of turn over? We've kind of seen a little bit. I think the Chiefs have done a good job of maintaining it. But yeah, if we do see retirements from Jones and Kelce, you know, how does that change things for the team? But so far, Kelsey's given no indications that he plans to retire after this season. So I think that'll be a bigger question more down the track. But let's get into this game a little bit. Now that we kind of have the stakes of the game, how do we think it's going to play out? Is this going to be a more offensive, more defensive game? What is kind of your read on the game script here?
I've been going back and forth on this a lot. Like, on one hand, we have two elite defenses, but on the other, we have two really elite offenses, and both sides of the ball are super well coached. So I think we will see something similar to the Bills game, the Bills-Chiefs AFC Championship, where we see these lulls where the defenses really like bunker down and come out strong. But we'll also see some of these more explosive plays, some of these longer drives. And I think that's something that's going to be interesting is how long are these drives going to be? Are the Eagles going to be forced to just walk it down the field methodically? And the same for the Chiefs. Are the Chiefs going to be able to get Xavier Worthy, Marquise Brown in behind and create chunk plays, or are they going to have to go on an 8-minute drive just to get inside the 10? And I think that'll kind of determine how high scoring and what type of game we see is whether or not these teams can create big plays.
I mean, for me, I think this would be a lot of early scoring, similar to how the Bills Chiefs game was. It was like 16-21 at halftime. So I'm going to expect to see a lot of scoring in the first half. Obviously, the Chiefs were able to get a stop on the Bills on their first drive. But it's obviously not the same offense. Like, the Eagles just have a much higher caliber offense. They're going to be able to, like I said, going back to how if Saquon could get early footing in the game, how much time they can take off the clock and keep that possession in Hurts' hands and just build off of that. And I think it's going to be a very limited number of three and outs. I don't think we're going to see a lot of commercial breaks, unfortunately, to all those people that look forward to the commercials.
They'll get them in there for sure. They'll force it. Definitely.
But I think it'll like give each team at least two possessions, and then we're going to start seeing some defensive stops once the defense kind of learns what they're going to see in the offense and just build from there.
I kind of see it almost in the reverse. I think we could see the opposite, where defenses come out really strong in the beginning, and then offenses kind of put up a decent response, make some headway a little bit later in the game. But I think going back to the point of explosive plays, to me, that is like what I think will decide the game. Like, I think it's been interesting because Saquon's been able to break one off in like every single playoff game, which is just it's mind blowing. And like the Eagles so far have been the explosive team, and the Chiefs have been more the dink and dunk team, despite like their different roster builds, which is kind of interesting. So I think that's what I'm most interested to see play out.
Yeah, I think I would expect both teams to have a couple big plays, but I definitely agree. I do think the Eagles will be the ones to get more of those explosive plays. If you see the Chiefs selling out on Saquon, you obviously have AJ Brown and Devontae Smith on the outside. And the Chiefs, although I like Xavier Worthy, Hopkins, and some of their other weapons, it's really not the same. Mahomes is going to have to kind of create those big plays. I think that they'll come in those off-script Mahomes to Kelsey or a deep ball where you get a receiver break off his route. And I think the Eagles are going to be the more capable team of kind of scheming those big runs, big passes. So I would kind of expect a little bit of a slower start, like Chloe said, just because you'll feel that tension and neither team will really want to give up that huge play right at the beginning.
Yeah, well, that kind of leads us into our game prediction. So this week we are going to do a Super Bowl spectacular, Super Bowl special. So we are going to pick game winners, over under, and then the prop bet of our choice. So we'll kick things off. We'll start with David here. Who do you have winning this matchup, Eagles or Chiefs?
I'm going to take the Chiefs, and I'm going to take it to be over the 48.5 points line. And I think for my prop bet of choice, I had a hard time thinking of this one, but it will be the meteor crashing into the stadium. Yeah.
What are the betting odds on that?
It's about plus 10,000.
So great return.
Yeah, great.
Great
value
return. Yeah, good value play over there.
I, of course, will be rooting for the Chiefs. And I will be picking the Chiefs as well. Mahomes, Reed, Spagnuolo, they have too many guys who've been here, done that before, and are still at the top of their game. I think it will be extremely close, and I do think it will sneak over that line of 48.5 points, just because when you get into that second half, the desperation for one or both of the teams will start to kick in, and you'll see the ball being pushed down the field more, or potentially Saquon breaking off another 75-yard rushing touchdown. And for my prop bet of choice, I think this is some great value, considering that Mahomes has, I believe, done this every single time in his Super Bowl MVP speech. It will be the Super Bowl MVP to thank God first before their teammates, family, friends, and the fans and coaches. I think Mahomes will be the MVP, and I believe that is what he has done in the previous years.
I mean, for me, I'm going to, as much as I hate to say it, I think the Chiefs are going to win it. They're just going to have to happen. You know, it's, as a Rams fan, I mean, it's a little brutal, like last year as well, like having to choose between the 49ers and the Chiefs. But this year, I want to kind of see something special. So, but I still think that the Chiefs are going to pull out something out of their bag. They're going to get it done. I think the script's in their favor. But besides that, I'm going to have to follow the Basurto ball knowledge, and I'm going to take an over on the 48.5. And my bet of choice is going to be having Taylor Swift as the first celebrity cameo at plus 200. I think that's pretty good value as well. I think definitely going to be there at the game. It's just a matter of it was either that one or the chance that Kelsey proposes to her at the end of the game.
I think that one is like a money pit that people are just,
yeah,
I think that one's never gonna happen, but hey, if you want to lose some money, go for it. All right, so I kind of zigged where everyone zagged. I grew up big Philly fan. My dad grew up in Philly, and actually we are going to be in NOLA for the Super Bowl with like a huge Philly section, so I think,
wow.
In terms of protecting myself over the next few days and, you know, my heart, I'm going to go with the Eagles here. I mean, I think the story all season long has been the Chiefs are vulnerable. So while it does kind of feel like a Chiefs win is inevitable, we also know that they have holes, right? And I think that the Eagles are well suited. I do believe in building from the lines. I think the Eagles have the better lines. I think if they could win the line of scrimmage, they have a really good shot of winning this game. And then kind of along that train of thought, I think if the Eagles win this game, it ends up being a lower scoring game. I think it ends up being a more defensively dominated game. So I'm going to go Eagles. I'm going to go under. And for my prop bet of choice, I'm going to say that there will be a sack in the game before we see a touchdown, which I think is an interesting one. I also like there's another Taylor Swift one I liked, which was we see Taylor Swift in a cameo before we see a touchdown in the game. So those are the two I'm keeping my eyes on. Hopefully you guys at home are also making some bets for this weekend. I think it just raises the stakes of all the games. It makes it so much more fun.
I agree.
But that will do it for us today. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at KTRU.sports on Instagram and at KTRU Sports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for the staff, please feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to ktruesports@gmail.com. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. That'll do it for us today. Have a great weekend. Bye.